an interesting fact that in the West, very few people have a genuine sense of devas. It's true that the church talks about them, and that there is a good deal of comment and prayers and writing about angels, but again, there are extremely few people who have a genuine conscious knowledge of them. Same thing happens in theosophy. A lot of people talk about the Devic world, the Devic life, and devas in this or that or the other direction. But again, a genuine sense of experience is a very unusual thing. And one of the other interesting facts is that generally speaking, our pictures, our mental images that we make of the Devic life and the Devic understanding of ourselves is entirely misleading. There's a simple reason for that, but it's a very real one. We interpret things, devas particularly, through our own images. And according to our type, our temperament, and our past experience, so those mental images govern whatever kind of devic experience we may happen to have. For example, I've never seen a deva with a face, and yet he's always given one in all the pictures, in all the illustrations, in all the comments that are made. A deva is spoken of as though he has a human form, at any rate to some extent. But they are not formed as we are. They haven't the same kind of structure. They are actually centers of force. It's quite impossible to do more than speak of the devas and ourselves except in simple terms of experience. We cannot be even intellectual about them, because the material we have at our command is extremely limited, it's bitty, and it is very often contradictory. But many of us, at any rate in our society, have a natural love, a tendency to turn to the Devic life. And little by little, their influence, their power, their cooperation becomes to us a living reality. That is, at the moment, perhaps, all that we can achieve. But knowledge of them has to be acquired, and it is a forward-moving step in our theosophical life that we begin consciously and in a self-aware fashion to accept them and cooperate with them in simple terms of daily experience. And I think perhaps one of the simplest ways is to first of all consider the Arupa Deva, who, as we all know, is formless. He's very powerful. He's more like sunshine than anything else. And these formless Arupa Devas, who are in charge of working out the patterns of nature, and for that matter of mankind, are always cooperating with humanity, and yet mostly silently, unseen, unknown, and unrecognized. They work on the vertical line. They project archetypal patterns. They carry them in an embryonic fashion within their field of influence. And when I've said that, I haven't made any sense at all. We have no words in which to put our formed opinion of the Devic life. And so we have to use the words of the earth plane, which do not in any way really make a true picture, but it's the best that we can do. But to sum it up, They project into space, through nature, into the ways of humanity, the archetypal patterns of the divine mind. And the whole thing is a mystery. We shall be a very long while on the journey of experience before we really understand anything about this. And then, in theosophical terminology, we are accustomed to the Rupa Devas, the lesser hierarchy. These have form, as we know. They take the pattern and they work it out horizontally, extending it along the line of the atoms of the particular plane on which they are cooperating. And that again is a mysterious thing, because when we have said as much as that, it does not really convey any working principle to our minds. But there is a very interesting point of intersection with man, and it is at the fourth level, that vital level of the mental plane. And in the human being, the connection with man, the bridge, is reflected into the ether four of man's etheric field. And so all the time, we have a bridge between us and the devic life, and the deva has his bridge with the human being, or the group of human beings, that he is working with. There's also another very interesting factor. We always speak as though we have to seek out the devas, but it's not true. We never have to discover them. They are there. We have to become aware of them, and we can only do this through a conscious self-awareness of ourselves, to begin to know that we and they are working together in design and with a purpose. I would like to emphasize once more, even at the cost of appearing tedious, to say that we do not in the least realize sufficiently that the devic and human life are always intimately woven. Without devic life, there would be no human evolution, and without human life, there would be no devic evolution. Evolution would probably stop at the animal kingdom on the one hand, or the elemental kingdom on the other. So far, the cooperation has been largely unconscious on the human side. There's only been an inkling of it in folklore and religion, but it has always persisted. And all through the ages, the human idea has always carried on, even though people have not realized in the least what it is that they are expressing. But we've now reached the point where that cooperation must be made conscious. And as theosophical students, we have to get a simple idea behind us that at the very base of the pattern lies the human spirit in its three aspects, Atma, Buddhi, and Manas. This is identical with the three aspects of devic life, known respectively as Lucifer, the Dehan Buddha, and the Dehan Chuan. These belong to the Arupa level. But what we don't realize is that at the Rupa levels, the levels of form, though the identity is not so close, every action of the human mind and every action in the physical world automatically brings into play a reciprocal movement on the devic side. That is, if we manufacture a physical object, elemental life instantly fills that physical form. If we build a large object like a ship, this life assumes an individual form, an entity, as it were, of its own kind. It has characteristics which are individual to itself. ships are particularly good examples of this. All sailors affirm that some ships are lucky and others unlucky. Some are happy and well found, whereas others seem to be full of trouble, and no one is really happy in them. This is actually intimately connected with the action of the human mind. It works somewhat like this. When the mind comes into action, it is as though a note is struck or a pattern evoked in the mental world. We're inclined always to think that we build thought forms ourselves. In fact, in a lot of our theosophical literature, it really seems as though we do. But in the light of later experience, we are beginning to discover that we do not. We are like the architect who gives a plan and a quantity of energy. The energy is of undifferentiated buddhi, which is made available to the builder. The actual building, of course, is done by the deva. In fact, the formulation of an idea and the devic response are to all intents and purposes simultaneous. One would never be conscious of having an idea. If the form were not built, it would remain subjective and never be objective, even if its own level, were it not for the devic action. If the idea be such as to demand the creation of a physical object, then another step is taken, in that, as the physical material is gathered together, it brings with it its own inherent primitive elemental life. This too, of course, belonging to the lower levels of devic evolution, so that every thought and the feeling tone which colours it is an incarnation of the devic life and can never be anything else. At the astro-mental level, the feeling tone and the mental form being, of course, inseparable, though they are always mixed in varying proportion, depending upon the type of thought, its quality, its purpose, and the emotional feeling or association which goes with it.
Okay.
The intellectual content of a thought gives it its form, feeling gives it its colour, and so one conceive of the two as separate. But in practice, they always exist together. People often talk about pure thought. This is an abstract conception, and the very fact that the thinker takes pleasure in his abstract clarity willy-nilly gives it a tinge of colour. While at the opposite end of the scale, the most powerful emotional surge we are capable of is always concerned with some mental idea. We've already spoken of this reciprocal movement between deva and man. Now, how does this reciprocal movement affect us in ordinary life? I think the first thing that must strike us all is how important it is to learn to instruct the devas by clear thinking. They cannot be expected to cooperate efficiently if we present them with muddled thought, or if we are always changing our mind without due consideration of the changes which we wish to effect. We easily confuse a child by giving it incoherent instructions. It's just the same principle for the devas. This fact brings into evidence the human responsibility for clarity of thought and also of thinking with a true sense of purpose. It's quite startling to realize that altering our mind is actually altering the architecture of the mental world. But although it may startle us, it also makes us realize something of the nature of thought and the infinite number of constructive purposes for which it can be used. This is particularly valuable just now, during this transitional period of history. For any of us who are striving to understand what is taking place, it gives a wonderful opportunity. More than that, it gives the devas their opportunity too. Very few people realize that devas can die and disappear if they do not have their own experience. They already have immense skill and great power to bring to life things in which they are already trained. They are used to the rhythms of nature throughout the non-human kingdom. Every time we watch with delight and wonder the miracle of the spring, we are watching the work of myriad devic workers who are accustomed to this activity and whose joy and pleasure it is to perform actions to which they are not only long accustomed, but are also deeply conditioned. Through long eons of time and through trial and error, they have worked until they have reached the present perfection of performance. The human mind exists in order to create new rhythms and new patterns. Man is all the time breaking new ground in evolution. And whether we consider this good or bad, it means that the deva has to learn new ways of behavior and action. This is most easily done when the deva is given a clear sense of what is required. The horticulturalist wishes to produce a new specimen of flower or fruit. He has the idea in his mind of the new specimen he wishes to bring into being. But he has to take his present plant, bush or tree to propagate seeds, graft on new specimens onto known bushes or trees, to try this or that other new method of growth, and quite often eventually produces the exact result he has in mind. This could never happen unless the deva he had attracted by his original thought had worked with him and diligently used the mental pattern presented to him. We have here a coincidence of devic experience and of human experience, each one supplying his quota towards the necessities of the new pattern. Clearly, lower mental activity is not enough. All truly creative action must be related to the archetypal patterns of the higher mental world. It is at this level that the human being and the Arupa Devas are identical. A creation depends upon a dual impulse coming from this level, the one into the lower mind and the other down the corresponding devic channel to the Rupa Devas. This produces a creative field between the two, which in the case of ideas stops short at the astro-mental level, but if it has to crystallize in the physical world, it has to extend at least into the etheric. In all directions, the human-deva relationship extends. Our task is to become aware of this relationship and gradually to learn to discriminate how it shall be used. For instance, a thought form built and activated in the way that has been described can either be a godsend or a menace. It depends entirely what use is made of the created form. Much ordinary thought is transient. The devic response to this is equally transient. But many thought patterns are repetitive and are constantly being met by a similar repetitive response from the devic side. This fact gives the clue to many baffling experiences. We must always remember that the type of thought has no significance whatever to the deva. He is only concerned with responding to its impact and filling it with the vitality of his own world. But if we continue to repeat the same thought for years on end, there is a strong tendency for the human thought and its devic response to become curiously interlocked. It is just as if the Devic life becomes imprisoned in a closed vessel, thereby energizing a thought image and making it a more or less autonomous entity. The man who created this entity can die, but so detached, active, and strong has his thought form become that it goes on living, as it were, in its own right. Or, on the other hand, it can be sufficiently powerful within the auric field of its creator to appear to be an extraneous entity, both to his own perception and the perception of other people. Here we have one of the root reasons for people saying they are obsessed or being told by certain types of clairvoyance that they are in difficulties because an obsessing influence or person has become attached to them. These thought entities are very common. They're quite often seen by others, either clairvoyantly or otherwise, and they often are the cause of much stress and anxiety. If a person genuinely feels himself to be possessed of, let us say, an evil spirit, this may indeed be true, but the so-called spirit is in reality his own self-generated thought creation, and not, except in extremely rare cases, the result of psychic attack by another person or a black magician. The blackness is generally there, but it's the darkness of the self-centered, unspiritual aspects of the person's own mind, which he has never faced and certainly never recognized, and which he has allowed to become hypertrophied by a slackening and thereby weakening of the spiritual orientation of himself. It should be made clear that the devas are neither moral nor immoral. They are amoral. They are no more good or evil than a wild animal in its own environment. If, however, one brings a wild animal into a town, a human being may consider it as evil, but it is he and not the animal which contributes this quality. In the same way, the devic or elemental life which animates or activates a thought form is not in itself evil or black, but is only made so by its association with the man who has produced the thought. On the more positive side, a research worker working on a special subject repeats the same thoughts over and over again. If he establishes, either consciously or unconsciously, a healthy interaction between himself and the object with which he is concerned, the interplay between his own mind and the devic life behind his objective leads to an unfoldment and development of his thinking. His field of research is widened and enriched, and he often discovers, unexpectedly and intuitively, a new and richer understanding of it. For practical purposes, we always have to bear in mind that our choice of thought creations rests upon ourselves. If we continue to perpetuate an outgrown, outworn thought form, while it may give a certain kind of experience to the deva, it is, from the human point of view, as illegitimate as human acts of wanton destruction of natural phenomena are illegitimate from the devic viewpoint. If a man suffers in any way at the hands of the devas, it can only be because he has either allowed it or invited it. As with the individual, so with the group, whether it be large or small. We often speak of the influence or the atmosphere of a group, but we seldom pause to consider that the group of persons concerned is only half of the picture. The other half consists of the group of devas who've been attracted to and are concerned with the work of the group. At the present time, all kinds of groups are springing up and assuming great importance in modern life. One of our immediate tasks is to learn how to use these groups and to deeply realize that they must not be used for power over others or for selfish interests. Any group whose foundation rests upon the desire to establish goodwill to others, no matter what department of human affairs it is concerned with, can always rely upon a devic contingent who will convey the messages of goodwill to their correct destination. No matter how unconscious the group may be of this aspect of their work, it naturally and inevitably takes place, because at the point of unity, the buddhi manasic level, there is the deva-human cooperation between those who send out the quality of goodwill and those who are attuned to receive it. Naturally, the whole value of such work depends upon whether members of groups are selfless and impersonal. This is also true of the many varieties of healing groups, but it can be quite another matter when a man or woman has a personal and ardent wish to heal. Results are indeed achieved, but their permanency or validity will depend upon the degree to which an individual is working from his spiritual center, as well as from perhaps a more emotional level. As we know only too well, the personal element often stands in the way of the spiritual. This always vitiates the processes of genuine healing, since these may involve results such as a release from the physical body, which, from the spiritual and long-term point of view, are right. Whereas immediate results, with a spectacular, even though temporary, restoration to health, may be, from the same point of view, delaying the development of the patient's inner life. All this is an individual matter, but as every group is made up of individuals, so we must be prepared for the fact that there is the exact balance of the reciprocal movement between the human mind and the devic or angelic kingdom. Every wish, each thought, and every prayer is answered, though the answers, because they have to follow an intricate pattern of laws, may be very astonishing to the person from whom the petition originates. The response is nevertheless there to the one who is capable of understanding it. The more perceptive the individual, the more intelligently he will learn to use the power of his mind in such a way as to direct the devas towards carrying out his purposes. And I would like to add the fact that where large and important groups are held, such as an international conference, there is always an Arupa Deva in charge, whose function it is to see that the vast store of energies which are generated by powerful human minds are canalized and directed into those channels for which they are destined. It is just as though the potential energy of a great power station has to be stepped down and distributed in ways which can be utilized and made accessible to humanity as a whole. The principle behind any efforts we may make in this direction of cooperative experience is that of increasingly conscious living and a growing sense of direction in the light of that consciousness. This means that the mind used creatively becomes more and more the instrument of the will of Atma, and far less that of karma or desire. Used as we are to our theosophical literature, in which there is often mentioned some aspect of the Davic life, we very often do not really understand that the two worlds are in constant touch. They are as closely interwoven and interdependent as the weft and warp of a piece of material. But we can never grasp this fact by Kama Manas alone. The quality of buddhi, the intuition, is also required. Yet another step is also necessary to make our growing awareness effective in action. Buddhi must be supported by the power of the will, Atma. And since we as yet know little about the use of the will, it can be seen at once that all our efforts must be tentative, used lightly, and never be regarded as final truth. A great many people feel discouraged by their lack of experience and first-hand knowledge, but this is not necessary. It is a fine and good thing to live a life of inner venture and discovery. There is so much waiting to spring into conscious life, and which we, as very ordinary people, can help to bring into being, and so help during this period of transition. Increasing awareness is the key to the whole problem, for awareness of self is impossible without awareness also of what the lower mind calls not-self. For the higher mind knows that all is self, that the whole universe is one being, and that each of us, though apparently separate, deva or man, is in a paradoxical way that being. Integrated living, that is, life open above and below, is the way to human Davic growth. And there is a splendor ahead that can have no limits if only we will have the courage and pursue our way patiently and carefully, making such experiments as we can.